I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. President Trump sent federal troops to Portland, Oregon to arrest protesters who were ostensibly attacking federal property. They reportedly do not wear identifying name tags, use unmarked vehicles, and refuse to say which agencies they work for. The mayor said they have only made things worse by attacking and detaining people for no apparent cause. On Monday at the White House, Trump said he was considering sending federal troops to other U.S. cities.
Well, I'm going to do something that I can tell you, because we're not going to let New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and Detroit and Baltimore and all of these, Oakland is a mess. We're not going to let this happen in our country, all run by liberal Democrats.
So more federal law enforcement to some of these cities?
More federal law enforcement, that I can tell you. In Portland, they've done a fantastic job. They've been there 3 days, and they really have done a fantastic job in a very short period of time. No problem. They grab them. A lot of people in jail. They're leaders. These are anarchists. These are not protesters. People say protesters. These people are anarchists. These are people that hate our country. And we're not going to let it go forward.
Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney issued a statement in response saying these federal forces were not welcome in this city. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner said Trump's actions sounded like fascism to him and threatened to arrest federal officers if they unlawfully assault or kidnap people in the city. And we asked Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner to join us once again on Radio Times. And nice to have you back with us on the show.
It's always great to be here, Marty.
Taking the president's threat seriously, what could the city do to prevent the deployment of these federal troops in Philadelphia?
Well, first, I don't know how seriously we should take anything he says, and I say that for a very specific reason. He's talking about sending 150 federal agents of some sort to Chicago. Well, Chicago has a police force of 12,500 people. What he's really talking about with all this bravado and bluster is sending to Chicago 1% of their daily police force. You know, this is, in many ways, this is just typical Trump. It's all this talk about how he's going to deport an entire population of immigrants, but he doesn't have anything like the boots on the ground that would be necessary to carry out his fascist fantasy. And it is a fascist fantasy. I don't think we should be all that worried, frankly, that this is anything other than a bunch of campaign rhetoric built on the old Nixonian model of fear and division.
But these troops, I think they're from the Department of Homeland Security. They're in Portland, Oregon, as we speak.
I'm not saying he'll do nothing. I think he'll do something. But I think what he wants here, of course, is a campaign talking point that to paraphrase his words, that he is controlling the cities. And by the way, those cities happen to be places where there are a lot of people of color. They happen to be in certain instances in battleground states like Detroit and Michigan or Philadelphia and Pennsylvania. I mean, this is all just part of the typical Trumpian invent a reality and then build a campaign around it. Now, having said that, there's been some pretty terrible stuff in Portland. Based on the limited information we have, we see people being dragged off of the street. No indication that there's probable cause, other than maybe they look protesty. We are aware of someone who had a skull fractured with a, quote, non-lethal, unquote, sounds pretty lethal to me, round, striking him in the head. We're not going to tolerate this in Philadelphia. If you come to Philadelphia and you break state law, I don't really care whether you wear a uniform or not. We have to be even-handed with justice. We have to protect our constitutional rights. If they come and they follow the law, I don't know why that would be an issue. We work with federal law enforcement all the time in this office right now. It's an ongoing thing. So we got no problem with lawful behavior, but you're not going to come in here like stormtroopers and do some political move that is, frankly, another Trumpian fascist fantasy. You're not going to do that and have no consequence.
Are you saying then that if, and I realize we're speculating here, but then if federal troops, whether they were Department of Homeland Security from other agency within DHS, if they were sent to Philadelphia to protect federal buildings or federal monuments, and that is all that they did, that you would be okay with that?
As long as the feds follow the law, we're always okay with that. As I said, we work with them all the time. I spent most of my 25 years in private practice going in and out of the federal courthouse. I know a lot of these folks. We have no problem with that. But kidnapping is not lawful. And fracturing a skull without lawful justification, that is also not lawful. It is also not lawful to do some of the things that were done by some, a limited number, of Philadelphia police officers in Philly. And we've made it clear by our actions so far that we're not going to tolerate that either in the same way we have held civilians accountable. It's just basic. You have to treat people equally.
When you use the word kidnapping, is it because there's no, you know, sort of probable cause, or we're talking about people without name tags, in camo, in unmarked cars? Does that make it kidnapping?
Well, there's one widely circulated video that shows someone who appears to simply be on the street or walking down the street, and a bunch of, you know, Ninja Turtles jump out of a rental van, grab him and haul him off with no indication of why. You know, it is possible that there was some kind of very detailed, specific information about this individual, but nothing in that video suggests that. Everything in that video suggests something else, which is that they're acting like stormtroopers.
Are you going to be watching to see what happens in Chicago? And my understanding is that, as you mentioned, 150 federal agents being sent to that city. Now, the mayor of that city has also said they're essentially not welcome here. But what will you be looking for, assuming this happens?
I'm in close communication with the DAs in most of these cities. We all know each other, or almost all of us. We're all pretty friendly. And so, yes, I'll be keeping an eye to see what, if anything, happens there. What are you looking for? You're looking mm-hmm. for unlawful behavior. You're looking for, you know, supposedly peacekeeping behavior that is actually stirring up violence, which seems to be a lot of what happened in Portland. You know, there's kind of a very bothersome parallel here between the way various white supremacist groups specifically targeted what were mostly peaceful demonstrations around the death of George Floyd, with the idea that they would get in the middle of them and make them violent, with the idea that they would get into them and set off this fantasy race war that they're talking about. We're speaking now about the Boogaloos and that whole crew there, right? Well, what exactly is going on here? There has been no unrest in Philadelphia for weeks. And yet we have a president fabricating this notion that there's all this unrest on the street. You're here, Marty. I mean, you walk down the street. This is not the zombie invasion he's trying to make it out to be. If anything, this kind of behavior is liable to set it off. And I think that that's really interesting. I think it's particularly interesting when, while this is all going on, we have the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the leadership of the FOP, once again lining up to endorse Donald Trump, and they have the Proud Boys inside their headquarters, outside their headquarters. The people we really have to worry about in the United States right now, the ones who have actually killed a federal agent in front of a federal building, are white supremacists. They are not, you know, a bunch of people running around breaking a window. They're white supremacists. And so there's an agenda here, and it's an agenda that we just keep seeing over and over. The president doesn't really have a problem with the Confederate flag. The president wants federal troops to protect monuments. Really? Which monuments? The president has an issue with NASCAR getting rid of the Confederate flag. There is a pervasive issue here, and it's very clear that what this is really about has nothing to do with unrest or public safety. What this is really about is a president who is trying to follow the old Nixonian pattern of saying one thing, meaning another. He's trying to divide along lines of race. He's trying to whip up fear. This is Willie Horton. This is Richard Nixon. And we are not that far away from a presidential election that he is losing.
Help us understand the difference. And I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask you anyway. Mayor Kinney, this was a month or so ago, okayed the Pennsylvania National Guard to be stationed in the city. This was in June, essentially to protect businesses. What's the difference between what Mayor Kinney did and what the president wants to do?
Well, there are several, but the biggest one is nothing's going on now. Nothing's been going on for weeks, We are dealing with a totally different decision, you know, without my sitting in judgment on whether Mayor Kenney should have done that or not, because there is a very unfortunate history of National Guard troops around the country, including, if we go back in our history books, Kent State, Ohio, drastically overreacting in military ways to what was essentially peaceful protest. But let me not get into what the mayor did and whether he should have done it or not. Mostly what I saw was that the National Guard was protecting the statue of Frank Rizzo, which was then removed. Okay? I mean, let's be real about this. That's very different. We did have people who were committing burglaries and criminal trespasses. There were You know, there was a property lit on fire on Walnut Street. There were some serious issues that were criminal issues going on at that time. There are none now.
And you're saying, okay, I hear you, and that makes the difference. Let me read an email from Kyle who says, is there any precedent for local or state law enforcement arresting federal agents that might be breaking the law?
You know, feds have been arrested on many, many occasions. The law is quite clear that just because you're a fed or just because you're a president, you're not above the law. You can't come to town and murder people. You can't come to town and just take things because you want to. You can't break skulls and you can't kidnap. So, I mean, that's really not in question. It is probably the case that there's a long pattern of prosecutors, both federal and state, ducking accountability because it hasn't been politically palatable for the most part for prosecutors to prosecute law enforcement for much of anything. So it probably is more uncommon than it should be. But I just want to be very clear here. We have now arrested in connection with, call it the unrest, call it the uprising, whatever you want to call it. During that time period, we arrested almost 1,000 people. And those cases are now under consideration in our office. The city, separate and apart, cuffed up a whole bunch of people and gave them essentially curfew notices that the city has since dropped because they weren't criminal. They were civil. So we're talking a couple thousand civilians got busted. And we're having a discussion, you and I, about, you know, a couple of police officers in Philadelphia, maybe a federal law enforcement person who comes to Philly and commits a crime. This is how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be that there's not just accountability for thousands of civilians, that there's also accountability for people who wear a uniform.
Well, clearly the city faces lawsuits because of its treatment, the police treatment of protesters, whether it was on I-676 or at 52nd Street or other parts of the city as well. You're saying that's really a more important issue than the threat of federal officers being sent to Philadelphia?
You know, I guess I think all of these are important issues. But what I am saying is that we're going to hold people accountable. The law doesn't simply allow for it. It expects it. We are going to keep our oath. I don't care what the politics are. You have to be accountable. And, you know, it is even more disturbing in some ways to me, because when someone runs into a broken storefront and runs out with some T-shirts, that's a real bad thing for the business owner, for people who work there, for the neighborhood, et cetera. That's a real bad thing. But it's not stepping all over sacred constitutional rights like the right of assembly and the right of free speech. And that is exactly what the president is talking about, and it also, to some extent, is what we saw with certain individuals on 676.
We're going to have to leave it there. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, thank you for joining us on Radio Times, getting our conversation started.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And we are going to take a very short break. We've got a second guest who's going to stay with us for the rest of the hour talking more about this issue. And we want to hear from you, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moskowain-Wick. Welcome back to
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Radio Times. Officers reportedly from the Department of Homeland Security were deployed to Portland, Oregon, to ostensibly protect federal buildings, including statues and monuments, from attack. The mayor has complained they have only made things worse and does not want them in his city. There were reports of protesters being detained without cause by forces in camo, wearing no name tags and using unmarked vans. President Trump issued an executive order in June to deploy those troops. Here's Chad Wolf, the acting head of the Department of Homeland Security on NPR, explaining the administration's actions.
We're seeking to prosecute as many people as are breaking the law as it relates to federal jurisdiction. That's not always happening with respect to local jurisdiction and local offenses. But, you know, this is a posture we intend to continue, not just in Portland, but in any of the facilities that we're responsible for around the country.
He also said that local elected officials who object have no legal standing.
I don't need invitations by the state, state mayors or state governors to do our job. We're going to do that, whether they like us there or not. That's our responsibility.
Joining us now is Elizabeth Goteen, and she is the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. And Elizabeth Goteen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're very welcome. I should add that she is joining us by Skype. And you can join us as well. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can give us a call, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Now, we heard Larry Krasner, the district attorney of Philadelphia, basically saying that from his perspective, the president is on pretty shaky legal ground to be able to be sending these troops to these cities, Portland being the most obvious one, but if he threatened to send them to Philadelphia, is the law on the president's side or not?
Well, it's a little bit complicated. In general, when it comes to ensuring public safety, whether it's during protests or otherwise, that is quintessentially the state's responsibility. It's the state police power that's reserved to the states under the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Now, states can certainly request federal assistance in enforcing the law, and they can pass laws allowing federal agents to enforce state law, but that's not what's happening here. This is a situation where Oregon's governor and Portland's mayor are actually demanding that these federal agents leave the city. So the claim by the Trump administration is that the agents are there to protect federal property, and that's something they can legally do, with or without the state's consent. And that's the official justification. The problem is that's just not true. We know this for a couple of reasons. One thing is that President Trump himself keeps going off script and saying the quiet parts out loud. He's been saying that he's sending the feds in to do the mayor's job because the mayor isn't doing what the mayor should be doing, according to Trump. So that's not the feds enforcing federal law. It's a takeover of state government. And Trump has used those words. And then the other piece of it is that we can see from what they're actually doing that it doesn't involve enforcing any law. It's really just picking up protesters who are far from any federal property, who are not visibly engaged in any criminal activity, let alone a federal crime, and sort of kidnapping them into unmarked vans. That's not enforcement of federal law.
The fact that they apparently are, they don't have any identifying name tags, so you don't even, if let's say you get detained, you don't know who this person is, you don't know what agency they're involved in, they might pull you or put you into an unmarked van. How about that? Is there any sort of legal justification for the sort of anonymity of these officers?
Well, the justification that's been put forward is that this is for the safety of the officers, and if they advertise who they are or what agency they're from, they could be in danger. That is really very implausible because I think it cuts the other way. If you are picked up by people wearing fatigues in an unmarked van and they don't tell you who you are, who they are, you have every reason to believe that you are being unlawfully kidnapped, maybe by a private militia or just by people wearing fatigues. And so at that point, you are going to resist with all the force that you have from being kidnapped. Whereas if somebody approaches you and says they are a federal police officer and they're taking you into custody, at that point, it's illegal for you to resist arrest. So it is far less safe for both the agent and the person being apprehended when the agent doesn't identify himself or herself.
So if this is illegal, as you describe it, what can a mayor, what can governors, what can district attorneys do to, if not push back, prevent the deployment of these troops in their cities?
It's very difficult to prevent it ahead of time because, in fact, the federal law enforcement agents have a right. They have the legal authority to be on federal property, to protect that property. They have the right to be within the states enforcing federal law. So the problem comes when, in practice, that's not what they're doing. They're not enforcing federal law. They are exceeding their jurisdiction and or acting in a way that violates the rights of the people. And in that situation, cities, states can bring suit. They can bring lawsuits, which is what we saw happen in Oregon. And as Mr. Krasner was saying, if a federal law enforcement agent commits a crime,
right,
and there is probable cause to believe that a federal agent has committed a crime, that is something that can and should be prosecuted.
No, my understanding is that this was precipitated by the president issuing an executive order. I believe this was back just last, maybe it was even this month, I'm not sure, June or July, essentially saying, I'm going to make sure that these public monuments, this public property is protected. Again, is he on legal standing just by instituting or issuing an executive order to protect federal property?
Sure. The law, and he doesn't really need to issue an executive order for that. The law allows federal agents, it specifically allows Department of Homeland Security agents to, be part of protecting federal property and federal personnel. That's absolutely legitimate. Again, the issue comes when they use that as a pretext. Mm-hmm. And once they're in the door on that pretext, they're then involved in various other activities, which not only have included roaming around in vans and picking people off the street, but also just generally engaging in violent suppression of First Amendment protected protests with indiscriminate firing of rubber bullets, including at journalists who have been struck. Which has nothing to do, once again, with protecting federal property or federal monuments. So there is a legal justification for what the president says that federal agents are doing, but not for what they're actually doing.
Well, as you say, and this is, I think, very true about our president, which is he often says the quiet part out loud, but he basically targeted cities that were run by Democratic mayors, and mayors who represent the Democratic Party. Is that a giveaway to you?
Absolutely. And he has been itching to do that since he became president. Within 5 days of his inauguration, he was tweeting that if Chicago didn't bring its crime under control, he was going to send in the feds. He has been looking for an excuse. And he got his excuse with the protests in the wake of the brutal police killing of George Floyd. So this is something that has been a political aim of his for a long time, going into cities that are run by Democrats and, cracking skulls, quite literally in some cases, plays very well with his base. And right now that base is increasingly becoming disaffected by his mishandling of the COVID crisis. So he needs something. And we're seeing right now that his campaign ads are sort of featuring and glorifying some of this quote unquote law and order behavior that we've seen recently in Portland and elsewhere.
That the suburbs are going to become, mayhem because if Joe Biden gets elected president.
Exactly. And this false claim of anarchists and people who hate America, which, by the way, I should point out that if there are any anarchists or people who hate America in these groups, they also have a First Amendment right to protest as long as they're doing so peacefully. It's very clear that the president's goal here is not to protect federal property, but to target people who are protesting racial injustice and to target democratically run cities and states, as he has said, and to quote unquote take them over. That's his words, because he believes he can get some political gain from it.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Elizabeth Goitein, and she is co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. And we are talking about the deployment of federal troops in places like Oregon, Portland, Oregon, I should say, and the fact that the president has threatened, at least out loud, to send them to other cities, including Philadelphia. We began with the district attorney, Larry Krasner, talking about that. You can join us by sending us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I've been reading a lot in preparation for today's show. I've been reading a lot about the Insurrection Act of 1807, also the Homeland Security Act of 2002, and something that you wrote not so long ago about how a president, and I guess this president using these powers, has really extraordinary powers under the heading of a national security or a national emergency. Help us understand the powers that a president has.
Sure. So under the U.S. Constitution, there are no explicit emergency powers that are delegated to the president. And that's actually fairly extraordinary because most modern constitutions have special regimes for emergencies. That's not the case in the U.S. So the president relies on Congress, for the most part, to provide enhanced authorities to deal with emergency situations. And Congress has been extremely generous in doing that. So there's one law, which is called the National Emergencies Act, mm-hmm. where the president can declare a national emergency, and that declaration unlocks authorities that are contained in more than 100 different statutory provisions. And some of those provisions seem quite sensible and quite narrow and tailored to what an emergency might look like, but others are really very much the stuff of authoritarian regimes, including powers to freeze Americans' bank accounts or to, shut down communications facilities. The Insurrection Act in particular, that's a different emergency power. It's not under the National Emergencies Act, but that gives the president tremendous discretion to deploy federal troops and to federalize the National Guard in cases of civil unrest. That law... It's been used many, many times, but not recently. The last time it was used was in 1992. And there's a lot of political pressure, I think, not to use it, maybe just because of the title, the Insurrection mm-hmm. Act. So mm-hmm. modern presidents have stayed away from it. And President Trump talked about using it to deploy federal troops in the protests, the George Floyd protests. But his own Secretary of Defense said publicly that it was a bad idea, essentially, and he didn't do it. So he's basically looking for workarounds to the Insurrection Act, and he's finding them. One workaround is what he's doing in Portland, which is sending a highly militarized agency. It's no accident that he chose the Department of Homeland Security. This organization was conceived as a quasi-military agency in the wake of 9/11. Its mission is quasi-military, involving border security and anti-terrorism and cybersecurity. It buys its military-grade equipment directly from the defense industry, right? Wow. This is a quasi-military agency, and it is acting in Portland not as federal law enforcement agencies. It is almost acting as a paramilitary force, the way it's behaving.
Let me pick up on several things, and I'm actually looking at something that you wrote. It was in the New York Times on April 10th of this year. But you talk about the Stafford Act and the National Emergencies Act, basically as powers that we don't really know about. In many ways, they are secret, and the president is said, "I have the right to do a lot of things that people don't even know about." He is correct about that, and it seems that a lot of this, maybe it hasn't been used, and that's why it's secret. But nonetheless, if it's being used now and it's secret, we're on very thin ice.
Right. And in that op-ed, I was actually not speaking about the National Emergencies Act and the Stafford Act, which you can actually look up and read those laws in the U.S. Code. But I was referring to something called Presidential Emergency Action Documents. And these are a set of presidential orders and directives that have been drafted over several decades. And they're basically drafted in advance of a range of potential worst case scenarios, so that they are ready to go, ready for the president to sign if whatever that scenario is comes to pass. And they are highly secret. None of them has ever been released or even leaked. But we have some indications from other official documents that they include things like the ability of the president, or that they purport to allow the president to unilaterally suspend habeas corpus, and that means to be able to imprison people without taking them before a court. That's not constitutional, but that is something that supposedly is allowed. Martial law is another one. So these documents contain reportedly some pretty scary authorities, and they're completely secret. They're not even overseen by Congress.
But just to not to get too paranoid here, but just to understand, so that if for whatever reason President Trump felt like he needed to use some of this authority, he would be legally, constitutionally protected?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying we would have no warning, and there would have been no oversight by Congress to make sure that these orders were in fact, constitutional and appropriate. So our first notice would be when the order was actually signed and put into effect. Now, at that point, certainly people could bring lawsuits. People who are affected by these orders could challenge them in the courts. And that is the great thing about the United States constitutional system. We have three branches of government. Congress seems to have checked itself out largely recently. And the courts tend to be very reluctant to wade in measures involving emergencies or national securities. But we've seen that change a little bit in recent years with various different kinds of overreach. So the Supreme Court was willing to step in Guantanamo Bay. And you know, I think if President Trump were to, you know, try to declare martial law or suspend habeas corpus, I think the courts would step in as they should.
Here's an email from Mary. She says, I agree that Trump's actions are designed to get him reelected by creating fear in the populace. This follows Putin's playbook and other similar dictators as well, with William Barr providing cover for Trump's actions. This is an extremely worrying situation. Help us understand the role of Barr, obviously, you know, the chief law enforcement officer in the country.
Right. So his role has been key because, you know, as I said before, President Trump has really been itching to find a way to deploy the feds to take over states and cities. And that in this country, that's just not something the president can do. His powers under the Constitution are limited. And so he's relying on Attorney General Barr to try to figure out the legal loopholes. I think his preference would be to deploy the military. That would appeal to his sort of autocratic leanings. The Posse Comitatus Act prohibits the participation of federal troops in law enforcement activities unless there is an explicit congressional authorization. Now, the Insurrection Act, which we discussed, is a statutory exception to Posse Comitatus, but the president doesn't want to use it. So he has tasked Attorney General Barr with finding a workaround.
You know what? Elizabeth, if you don't mind, only because we have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. I want to pick up on that right after this short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
On WHYY in Philadelphia, just a quick recap. President Trump has threatened to send federal troops to Philadelphia and other cities, as he has in Portland, Oregon. We're talking about why this escalation raises a whole host of critical constitutional and civil rights concerns. And again, our guest is Elizabeth Goitein, and she is the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. And again, you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Right before the break, you were talking about the Posse Comitatus Act, which basically says the military can't be a domestic police force. But here we are talking about kind of a quasi-military, as you described, the Department of Homeland Security. Just finish your thought for us, and I do want to get a caller to join us on Radio Times.
Sure. So there is the quasi-military force that we're seeing in Portland. And then in Washington, D.C., what the president did in that case, and this was Attorney General Barr's interpretation that he relied on, was to summon the National Guard of 11 different states and have those National Guard units come to Washington, D.C. against the wishes of the mayor. And the reason that the legal loophole that was being exploited there is that when the National Guard is operating under the state's command and control, not the president's, they are not subject to Posse Comitatus. They are allowed to engage in law enforcement activities. And one situation in which that can occur is when they are engaged in sort of federally sponsored, federally funded training activities. And so Attorney General Barr said, well, this will be training for the National Guard. They can come to Washington, D.C. and do their training there, and they won't be subject to Posse Comitatus, even though for all practical purposes, they were answering to the president and the Secretary of Defense.
Let me just read one comment left by Katrina, who said, I used to live in Portland, and there are a lot of white supremacists there. I believe President Trump is doing the right thing, using federal enforcement officials to quell white supremacists who are trying to mix in with the Black Lives Matter protesters. I mean, this is where it gets really complicated, Elizabeth, because most of the protests have been very peaceful. Most people there for peaceful reasons and have acted peacefully. But there have been, you know, anarchists or white supremacists or others or criminals who just have been troublemakers.
Right. I have yet to see any evidence, anecdotal or otherwise, of federal agents in Portland cracking down on white supremacists. That's not why they're there. That's not what they're doing. They're picking up the people who are legitimately protesting racial injustice. So that, again, that's just sort of a false premise. However, I will say that there have been occasions in our nation's history, and there are will be occasions in our nation's history when federal law enforcement agents have been involved and must be involved in acts of violence by white supremacist organizations. Again, if federal law enforcement is actually enforcing federal law, that is something that they have the authority to do, whether or not the state or local officials consent to it. And so that is, yeah.
Does that take us back to the 1950s when Eisenhower sent in, I think it was the 101st Airborne, to Little Rock, Arkansas, to integrate the schools against, I think, the wishes of the governor of Arkansas? But is that what you're talking about?
That's very much related. So that was not federal. Well, it did include federal law enforcement agents, but it was primarily the military. And that was under the Insurrection Act. And under the Insurrection Act, if a state is refusing to enforce federal law in ways that impacts the civil rights of its residents, then the president can call out the military to enforce the law. And that's exactly what happened. And it's interesting because what President Eisenhower did is he federalized the National Guard in Arkansas and then ordered them to stand down because he knew that they weren't going to be that helpful. And then he sent, regular active duty federal troops down to Arkansas to enforce the law.
Let me get Susan from Westchester to join our conversation. And Susan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Susan, and I'm from Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
I am calling a question about the Federal Protective Services. According to the USA, the GSA.gov website, that federal law enforcement agency that provides security and law enforcement, and they rely on privately contracted guard force to provide security to federal facilities. My questions are, who are the contractors, and who do they hire, and who pays them?
Yeah, unfortunately, your phone line is not so terrific, but let me just paraphrase what I think you're saying, and we'll get a response from our guest. Susan from Westchester wants to ask about federal agents in Portland. Heard that the federal customs hires them from private contractors, and she's asking to know if we know who they are. Does that complicate, Elizabeth, if we're talking about independent contractors doing the work of DHS?
It certainly does, because independent contractors do not operate with the same level of transparency and accountability that federal employees or state employees do, or at least are supposed to do. I mean, part of the problem that we have here is that the federal law enforcement agents are not operating with the necessary transparency and accountability at all. But if everybody's acting the way they should, then it's true that the independent contractors, there's not the same level of oversight and accountability. And so that is certainly a practice that is problematic, certainly in the way that it happens on the ground.
You talked about the politics of all this. And just to add to that, I think it's so interesting. Certainly coming from extreme right or even from the National Rifle Association, the fear of quote-unquote jackbooted thugs. And these would be, of course, federal officials doing things that the NRA and others did not agree with. And yet the NRA endorses Donald Trump for standing tall for our Constitution, freedom in which our members all believe. Just to sort of add to the politics of what's going on.
Right. No, it's definitely not sort of equal on both sides in the sense that there was a rumor that was going around in Texas several years ago that President Obama was going to deploy troops or federal agents down there for some kind of exercises, and that this deployment was actually an excuse. That right. These sort of, I guess, border security exercises was an excuse to take over Texas. And there was, you know, absolute outrage on the part of Texans, mostly conservatives and people who were not supporters of President Obama, and really terror as well, that this really was Obama trying to take over Texas. Now we have a president who says that he wants to take over these cities. And those are the words that he uses. And he's actually following through by sending federal agents, federal forces into these cities against the wishes of local authorities and doing things in those cities that certainly appear to be illegal and that violate the rights of the people there. And I'm sad to say we are not hearing a peep from conservatives in Congress, the people who really ought to be pushing back against this.
Here we have two comments. William says Trump is doing the right thing, protecting cities. It's terrible watching what happened in Philadelphia with the looting. Chris left a comment. It is as if Trump has the fascist playbook. I can't believe what I'm seeing. I mean, obviously, people are going to have different opinions on this, but it is interesting. And I think a bit of a conflation about the problems, the violent problems of the protests, whether that had anything to do with federal buildings or federal property. Can you speak to that, Elizabeth?
Right. And also the issue of whether whatever the problems are, whether they can, in fact, be handled by state and local officers without the feds stepping in this very heavy handed way against the objections of local authorities. You know, it's not, you know, the caller or whoever wrote in that comment, you know, can't be blamed for thinking that violence is and looting is happening everywhere all the time, because that's sort of what the media focuses on. That's what you see right. The images of mostly, and that's what is sensationalized. So if you were to believe the images you see, you would think that this is pervasive. But you have to focus on the facts. These demonstrations have been largely peaceful, and the incidents of things like violence and looting have been very much isolated incidents at the fringes of what are otherwise peaceful demonstrations, even though those images are what we tend to see. And what the states are telling us, and certainly the state and local officials in this case, have no interest in seeing violence in their cities, in seeing their buildings burned or anything like that. And they are saying, we can handle this. We don't need help. And when the feds come in, it makes things worse. It provokes more violence. It makes the situation more tense. It raises tensions. It makes a problem for us. It doesn't solve a problem.
And it seems to me you need pretty extensive training to be able to handle protests and the possibility of things going awry.
That is true. And it's, you know, again, because we know so little about who is being deployed on this mission in terms of, you know, federal agents, what instructions they received, what training they had. Now, if we're talking about mostly Customs and Border Patrol agents, which is probably what we are talking about, we know that these are officers who their training is not in civil unrest, right? Their training is in trying to keep people who are not Americans out of the country. And people who do not have constitutional rights in the U.S., trying to respond to those people. They are not trained in handling First Amendment protected activity of Americans. So it is certainly a significant concern.
And we should say that there are a number of lawsuits in Philadelphia, frankly, against the police department about their mistreatment of protesters over the course of the last couple of months. Let me read a couple of emails. Deidre says the federal response has been reported to be inciting more outrage, what you said, Elizabeth, that increases violence, targeting, and justification for feds being there, begetting more response. This is horrifying. An email from Rich: at his rallies, Trump urged police brutality by saying police should smash the heads of those arrested into police vehicle door jams as they're being placed into custody into police vehicles. That got a roaring approval from his rally attendants. Where is DOJ Attorney General Barr right now? Are you waiting for our attorney general to respond in some way, Elizabeth?
I think the attorney general is 100% behind what's happening. So I hardly expect him to respond in any kind of negative way to the violence that we've seen even. Now, you know, what we saw in Portland was that the police in Portland themselves were engaging in violence, and they were, you know, using rubber bullets, tear gas, you know, stun grenades, things like that, and causing a lot of damage. And in fact, there was a court order that basically said that they can't do that anymore unless there's somebody who's presenting an immediate risk to them. That is the only situation in which they can now use those what's called less lethal munitions. And less lethal means it's still lethal. It's just not as lethal as an actual gun. But the federal agents have taken the position that they are not bound by that court order. So actually the ACLU has filed a motion in court to make sure that the federal agents will also be subject to that, to a similar order, saying that they cannot be using this level of force unless there is an immediate risk to life. And we can absolutely expect to see Attorney General Barr and his Department of Justice fighting very hard not to be subject to that limitation.
The president is, I believe, quoting Article 2 of the Constitution, that he has the right to do whatever he wants. And it looks as if he's not just feels that way, but that he's acting that way.
Yeah, I've often wondered to myself whether he really believes that, or whether he's just pretending to believe it, or if he just doesn't care. It's hard to know. In practice, it doesn't really matter because he does act that way. And again, the other branches of government, occasionally you do see pushback, not so much in Congress, or at least not at the levels that would be necessary to override a presidential veto. So a few times Congress has passed laws to try to stop the president from doing things like selling arms to Saudi Arabia after Congress said they shouldn't. But in general, they without enough members being in favor of that to override a presidential veto. But I would say for the most part, Congress has not served as a backstop against this vision of unlimited Article II authority. And the courts have also been, and I guess I should say it depends on the court, the Supreme Court has been generally deferential in these areas, in claimed areas of national security. So, for example, with the travel ban that affected majority Muslim countries, the Supreme Court essentially upheld that, saying, as long as the president says the words national security, we're going to believe him.
Final question to you. Does though attacking monuments, federal monuments, does that threaten our national security?
No, and I don't think that that's the claim in this particular case. I think that the claim with respect to the monuments is just that the legal claim is that it's a violation of federal law, that federal law enforcement agents can claim. Of course, there's a political claim at the root of that, because we know which monuments this administration cares about. And again, it's a little bit of red meat to his base.
And here's my final question. I mean, interestingly, that the president has these powers and yet hasn't really used them to deal with the pandemic.
Yes, and that's a very interesting observation. And I think the president has used some emergency or sort of quasi-emergency powers in response to the pandemic. But the ones he has chosen to use are the ones regarding immigration, is to try to further his longstanding goal of just shutting down the flow of legal immigration into this country. So he has, in fact, flexed those powers fairly aggressively to impose immigration bans in response to the pandemic. But the powers he has available to actually respond to the pandemic itself inside this country, to mitigate its effects, to bolster the resources that are needed to fight the pandemic, he has been extremely tepid in his use of those powers. And,
you can hear my song. Elizabeth Goitein, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Diana Martinez, Al Banks, the engineers for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.